ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
If wealth inequality gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the super rich, the very rich, take a bigger and bigger, bigger share of the wealth, the biggest consequence of that is unaffordable housing. Living standards will fall for ordinary Australians.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. G'day, Matt Bevan here. This is If You're Listening. We're in the middle of a three-episode mini-series about Jeffrey Epstein, following the release of the most incendiary batch of Epstein files yet, the ones put out at the end of January. If you haven't heard our first two episodes on this, I'd recommend going back and listening to them before you listen to this discussion today, because our plan is to answer questions we've got from listeners via email about the Epstein files and about those two episodes. The questions we've had have been really interesting, and I think we can actually give you some answers to them, which is not something you can always do with the Epstein files. Supervising producer Kara Jensen-McKinnon is here. As opposed to me, she's been voluntarily reading obsessively about Epstein. Hi, Kara.
Hello, we are in this together.
We're kind of become a Mulder and Scully pair at this stage, not from the unresolved romantic tension part, but the skeptic and believer part. I mean, to be honest, I've never watched The X-Files, but I think that's what it's about.
I've watched a few episodes. I'm not entirely sure who's who. I think we're both Mulder in that we both kind of like live in a weird conspiratorial world. Neither of us would look good with like a red bob. So we can both be Mulder.
I mean, speak for yourself, Kara.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
So we've got questions. Let's jump into them and see what we've got.
Our first question is from Sam.
Hello, Matt and Kara. Absolutely adore the show. And I love the episode regarding Epstein and the US and the UK. My question is, at the risk of asking you to predict the future, loved Black Swans, what do you think the consequences, if any, for society / democracy / individuals from the Epstein affair is for Australia? Thanks very much.
Okay. I mean, it's not great. It's not going to have good consequences really for anybody. It's clearly having massive effects on society and democracy and individuals in the US and the UK, as we discussed in our last episode. We've kind of seemed to have dodged a bullet a little bit in terms of Australians showing up in the Epstein files. Maybe it'll just sort of reinforce our sort of general feeling of isolation and that kind of thing only happens on the other side of the world. But obviously it's destabilizing two of our most important security partners. Yeah, not ideal, I think. But in terms of possible consequences for individuals, I'm going to take a pass on that one. Thank you very much.
Yes. We had a couple of questions like this, actually, with people just asking us to list who we thought would be going to jail. And much as we would love to do that, we absolutely cannot do anything even remotely like that and broadcast it on the ABC. So I'm sorry, a lot of your juiciest questions cannot be answered on the public broadcaster.
Well, Kara, I mean, this is being pre-recorded and we will need to run it past people before it goes out. So you and I just could record those bits. Okay. And we'll see. Okay, ready? So you list the people that you think are going to go to jail, and then I'll list the people that I think are going to go to jail. You go first.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Top of my list is...
Wow, that's a spicy list, Kara.
Look, and that's just the beginning.
Here's my people.
Oh, my God, really?
You know, you didn't think that puppets were going to get involved in this, but there they are. Okay. Thank you for that question, Sam, and all the people who want us to get bankrupted by defamation proceedings. Thank you. Craig, go ahead.
Hey, Matt and the If You're Listening team. I used to live in the UK, and maybe that means that I'm a bit biased and don't like the royal family. But what I want to know is if Keir Starmer's getting all this heat about what he knew about Epstein and everything, how come the same questions aren't being asked of the royal family? Thanks very much, Craig.
Yes. This is a very good question. I think we obviously on last Thursday saw that Prince Andrew had been arrested, which kind of marks the beginning of a bit of a change in the way that the palace is having to deal with this. I think one of the interesting and funnest things about working at the ABC is that you actually get correspondence from Buckingham Palace directly. So I woke up on Friday morning.
What?
Did you not?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously you're not on the King's mailing list. Okay. Well, I woke up in the morning to an email from Buckingham Palace, and it was a statement from His Majesty the King. And it was the statement, obviously, that all of the news stations ran with, basically just saying that the King has learnt of the arrest of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and that they are going to work alongside the authorities with the investigation, and that as this process continues, they won't be commenting further, but he will continue with his duty and service. And I think up until this point, the monarchy has had this kind of culture of deference where there have been a number of scandals involving various people in the royal family in the past, and they've kind of sidestepped it or played it down in a way that has allowed them to kind of mitigate the risk to the family more broadly. Huh. And I think that this time, this scandal, they don't seem to be able to do that. So, you know, even reading that Charles has said we're going to be going back to business as usual, it feels like we're very far from what business as usual should be for the royal family. And I think that they absolutely have a lot of questions to answer, particularly about why a large sum of money was paid by the Queen to Virginia Giuffre, what certain people knew at certain times. And, you know, if charges are laid and there is an inquiry and there is a trial, then these questions will come to light and people will be called to the stand. But I do think that the people, the public, is very far ahead of the institutions at this time. And the UK Parliament could do something about it. Perhaps they could ask some questions. But I think the moment has kind of crystallized a shift in the way that the royal family is allowed to deal with scandals that relate to them.
As you say, even obviously no charges have been laid yet.
Yes.
But even if it never comes to charges and there is never a trial, it's now a very real question as to exactly how the institutions of the British government and the British justice system can respond to having members of the royal family charged with criminal offences. Even if it doesn't happen in this case, they probably need to figure out exactly how it would work
exactly
if it happens in the future, because it would dwarf even the complexity of what we saw over the last few years with the US attempting to charge a former president with crimes,
yes,
which was obviously massively problematic. And there were all these discussions about, is the head of state immune from this kind of thing? Can the head of state assert privilege over a whole bunch of information so that it can't be circulated? And, you know, obviously the palace in this case has said that they're going to cooperate fully, but if they decided not to, could they be subpoenaed?
Yes, exactly.
Could someone force the release of documents from the palace? Someone probably should be looking into how this would work in the future, because this sort of question hasn't been brought up since 1600s and
exactly,
back in the time when it was kind of off with their head kind of days.
Yes, we don't like to use the word unprecedented on this show, but this time it truly is unprecedented.
Yes.
That there would be a trial of this nature.
Okay, we've also got a question here from Sam.
Sam says, I was just wondering if there might be an update on the Mossad Jeffrey Epstein episode now that there has been more information published about his connections with Israel and the Mossad.
Well, I guess the thing would be, what more information, Sam? You know, there's certainly a lot of headlines about connections between Jeffrey Epstein and with Israel and the Israeli government. But when it comes down to nailing down some sort of a direct connection between Jeffrey Epstein and Mossad, it's much more complicated to really find a direct connection with him and the Israeli intelligence services. The reason that all this is coming up is because you have top Israeli government officials or former government officials being inside Jeffrey Epstein's close circle of friends, particularly in the case we're talking about Ehud Barak, the former Prime Minister of Israel. The story that is getting all this attention is that Ehud Barak was staying at an apartment that belonged to Jeffrey Epstein. And therefore, the Israeli government, which has a duty to protect Ehud Barak as a former prime minister, much like former leaders of most governments, there is some sort of a security detail that follows these people around. And the Israeli government organized a security system to be set up at Jeffrey Epstein's apartment because Ehud Barak was staying there. Now, does that equate to Mossad installing spying equipment inside of an apartment belonging to Jeffrey Epstein, which certainly would indicate some sort of a connection between him and Mossad? Or does it just indicate that Israel's equivalent of the Secret Service needed to install an alarm and cameras at the door in order to fulfill their ability to protect Ehud Barak? There's certainly no allegation at this stage that they installed anything at any of Epstein's more well-known properties, his Manhattan townhouse and his island and his ranch. We're talking about this one apartment that we know that Ehud Barak stayed at. I don't think that there's anything that's come out in the Epstein files, to me, that indicates that there is any new proof of a connection between him and Mossad.
Our next question is from Michael in Perth.
Hi, Matt and team. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. Wondering what you make of the allegation that Epstein was actually Q. I've seen quite a few people mention this possibility, and it could fit given how things have panned out for Donald Trump. Big fan. Can't wait to hear about Chinozim again. Cheers from sunny Perth.
why don't you take this one, Cara?
I'll take this one. So just to catch everyone up, the first episode of the series was basically about the origin story, I suppose, of QAnon and Pizzagate and why people thought that there was this cabal of very high-profile, high-power pedophiles that were exploiting children in the first place, why that aligned so closely with what actually kind of came to pass in the end.
Q seemed to be on the money because he was inspired by Epstein and inspired by reporting about Epstein that was out there in the public for anybody to see. And then when more information came out about Epstein, it was like, well, look, this guy has been talking about it forever. It's like, well, yes, but that's because he read it somewhere. It's correlation rather than causation.
So Q was part of like this culture on 4chan. Admittedly, I'm embarrassed to say that I've spent a bit of time on 4chan in my life.
Yes, Cara is in fact our 4chan expert. Go ahead.
But there used to be a thing on 4chan called LARPing. And LARPing in the normal world stands for live action role play. And it's basically when like people get dressed up in like, you know, dressed up as a knight and play Dungeons and Dragons and that sort of thing. But on 4chan specifically, LARPing is when you pretend to be somebody with special information. So you might pretend to be like a whistleblower or a government insider or like some sort of person with documents that are super secure. And you kind of do this role play thing where you pretend to be that person and everyone kind of plays along with it. And it's like a trolling thing that's actually kind of funny some of the time. Anyway, so that's kind of the culture that this is happening in. And Q, as we discussed on the show, was pretending to be this government insider that had this information. Q, between October 2017 and December 2020, posted 5,000 documents. And documents that are everything from like absolutely random gobbledygook text to text that is kind of related to things that were happening, to images, memes, you know, very strange stuff, that kind of links to videos, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, like anyone could be any person, but the chances of this being Jeffrey Epstein is basically zero to me, because on 4chan, everyone's anonymous. Every post has a specific kind of code. It's called its trip code. And every post you make, because you log on anonymously, the trip code is always randomly generated. You can tell that Q is the same person because they've actually logged in this kind of roundabout way and ensured that the code for all of their posts are the same. So it is one person. We know that much. So there's something about just thinking that Jeffrey Epstein would have the time to post 5,000 things that would directly lead people to further information about him that would be incriminating that I don't really buy. It's very much more likely that it is just another one of the people on 4chan that was doing that sort of stuff at the time. But, you know, look, I can't rule it out. We can't rule it out.
Well, I mean, Q kept posting until November 2022 and
yes,
Jeffrey Epstein
right.
quite famously died in August of 2019.
That's right. So at the very least, somebody either took over at the end, but Yeah, I think the chances are almost zero.
Yeah.
Okay, our next question is from Christina. She was asking about the episode that we did on the impacts of Epstein's friends and friends of friends around the world. She said that it seems like we were suggesting that the evidence had been sifted through by clever people who know what's important and credible, and they have said there's nothing more in the files to worry about. And then we also included a quote from Trump saying the files were boring and we should move on. Were you suggesting that you were happy with the Department of Justice's assessment on the files, and shouldn't we be asking for more evidence? Now, we've had actually a few questions like this, and so, yeah, we want to clear up, I guess, the point of that episode.
The through line of that episode was we were talking about how basically due to public anger, the system, that being the justice system in the United States, there's so little trust in what it says and does that it's kind of now been forced to give up its actual job. You know, usually information that is gathered as part of investigations, if they don't lead to prosecutions, is not released to the public. But of course, in this situation, special legislation was passed in order to make it so that this information could be passed on to the public so that the public could have a look at it and make what they will of it. I want to make it clear, I wasn't trying to say that the public have done something wrong. Clearly, the system of the justice system and the media have failed the public to the extent that the public can't trust them anymore. That was basically the point that we were trying to make. The public doesn't believe that the system is capable of holding these powerful people to account. Therefore, they have demanded to get the information themselves and figure it out on their own, which is now what is happening. And we're now seeing situations where there are certainly some proper judicial investigations going on, particularly in the United Kingdom. We're seeing that happening. But like what I was just saying with that connections between Jeffrey Epstein and Mossad, people are out there saying, look, proof that Jeffrey Epstein has something to do with the Israeli intelligence services based on the fact that the Israeli government paid for a security system to be installed in one of Jeffrey Epstein's apartments. Now, I would say that based on the information in that reporting and in those files, that's not what that proves. But it is, in fact, a sad story. It's not me being angry at the public or saying that the public have done something wrong. It is a sad story about the erosion of trust in public institutions and in the media that has now led to this stage of just information being thrown out there for anyone to interpret and carry out any sort of witch hunt that anybody wants to go on. Maybe that needs to happen in order to restore public trust in a society's ability to hold the powerful to account. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily where we're going to end up as more and more information is put out there and people make their own judgments about what they see.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're very much on your side when it comes to that. You suggest that we have included Trump's quote saying that the files were boring and we should move on. We were only using that quote in the show as an example of how strange what the institutions are saying, what the government's saying on this, when there is so much to see and the files are so far from boring.
But clearly, we don't think it's boring. We've just done
we've done two episodes on it.
We're about to do a third.
We're deep in this. We're with you guys when it comes to these files. We are reading them. We are going through them. You know, we've got our little cork boards out as well.
But also what we're doing is spending an enormous amount of time looking into each one of the allegations whether it seems true, whether there's any actual evidence backing these things up and really probing as deep as we possibly can, which is our job, to try and sort signal from noise. And when you have a 3 million document dump with often randomly made redactions, there's going to be so much noise, and we know there's so much noise and there's so much confusion. There's an truly staggering amount of disinformation flying around and in many cases being reported on, which would be one of the reasons why people are losing trust in the media.
Exactly.
But, you know, we're doing our very best to sort through that and only present information from these files that is reliable information.
Exactly. Fact check, corroborated, everything that we can do.
Yeah.
That's when we release it to you guys. Okay. Our next question is from Jacqueline. She asks, where did Jeffrey Epstein get his money from? This is actually something that we are going to be covering on Thursday, on our Thursday's episode.
This is what I've been doing for the last week. is yes. looking at what the information, both that is newly released from the Epstein files and already on the public record, tells us about Jeffrey Epstein's finances and where his money came from. And the key part of this that has come out just in the past week is a five-hour testimony from the former CEO of Victoria's Secret, Les Wexner.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to where did Jeffrey Epstein get his money from is almost certainly Les Wexner. How he got that money and how much it was and whether there's any more to the story, that is what we're going to be talking about on our Thursday episode.
Jacqueline also says, if you can answer my questions, then you might be able to choose who plays your parts in the movie that they will make about it. Sorry, Matt, that it won't be Robert Redford, RIP, but what about Leonardo DiCaprio or Brad Pitt? Well, I'm sure you'd be happy with those two choices.
Yes, I'll take it.
I'll take one of those guys.
Slightly promo dudes in a few different ways. So maybe I've just been watching The Night Manager and I'll take a Hugh Laurie or Tom Hiddleston, thank you. They might have to de-age Hugh Laurie, but not as much as you'd hope.
Yes. Maybe we could both be played by David Duchovny.
Maybe, yes. Oh, I mean, Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny playing the two of us would be a great outcome, I think.
To bring it full circle.
The thing is that I've just tried to imagine how much interest there would be in a movie that covers my work.
Yeah, how boring an investigation show is that has two characters that sit in their own houses and talk on the phone.
I mean, did you see that? There was that movie that came out late last year, which was Ice Cube. The whole movie was he was in some sort of like a control room with a whole bunch of screens and monitors, and there was like an alien invasion going on.
All right.
And him trying to somehow stop the alien invasion, but he never leaves this room. Apparently it's tremendously boring.
Okay, maybe we could both be played by Ice Cube then.
I would love that. I think that'd be fantastic.
Like in a Sinners way, where one character plays two guys.
Or Michael B. Jordan could play both of us.
Okay, now we're talking.
Now, people would watch that movie, even if it does involve him just sitting in two houses having a conversation with himself.
I would absolutely watch that movie.
So, if you want to see what I found while sitting in my basement room about Jeffrey Epstein's money, then check out our next episode, which comes out on Thursday. And Cara, we should say, this episode is coming out on, Tuesday the 24th of February. It's our primetime debut.
Oh, yes, that's right.
We probably should have mentioned this, but the Black Swan series, which if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you will already be across the Black Swan series because it came out weeks ago, came out in January. But the TV version of that is being aired on primetime ABC TV tonight at 9 o'clock.
Yes.
And it is our primetime ABC TV debut. It'll be fascinating to see how it's received by an audience that possibly don't see us coming. I mean, we're just they're going to be watching Todd Sampson and then bam, it'll be me in the weird void room with the giant screen.
Not Michael B. Jordan, unfortunately, just real Matt.
Yeah, just real me, yeah.
We've been told that if you have a Nielsen box in your house that takes stock of the television that people are watching, please watch that for us. Or if you don't, also fine.
You don't even have to watch it. I mean, please watch it, but also you just leave it on.
Exactly.
And they don't know if you're sitting there or not.
Scroll the Epstein files on your phone, but leave it on the TV.
Turn on the TV, set it to the ABC, go out, watch, I don't know, Wuthering Heights or something at the movies.
Absolutely.
We don't really care, but as long as your Nielsen box is registering that it's watching if you're listening on prime time. There you go. Otherwise, we will see you on Thursday.
Okay, bye.